You stand over a pile of scraps, leaves, and dirt, and you feel the weight of a simple truth. Nothing on a homestead stays still. Everything breaks down. Everything moves toward decay. Your job is to control that process instead of letting it control you. Composting looks easy from a distance. Once you step into it, the pressure shows up fast. Heat builds, moisture shifts, insects move in. The entire system reacts to every choice you make. Hot compost pushes you to work with speed. Cold compost forces you to wait. Vermicompost places the responsibility on living creatures that cannot speak but respond to every mistake. Each method gives you different tools, different risks, and different rewards. You handle heat, time, and life itself. You learn to read small signs before they turn into problems. By the time you finish all three systems, you will know how to build soil from scraps. You will know how to keep the process steady when the pile changes shape or smell. You will make compost on purpose, not by accident. Chapter 1. Hot Compost. You begin hot composting with a clear understanding. This method is fast, but speed brings pressure. Heat can rise too quickly. Moisture can swing out of range. The pile can collapse, burn out, or stall. You build it with intent, and you maintain it with discipline. Nothing in a hot system fixes itself. Your scope starts with the goal. Hot compost breaks down material through controlled heat. You aim for steady temperatures between 120 degrees and 150 degrees. You reach that zone by stacking the right mix of carbon and nitrogen. Browns provide structure. Greens provide fuel. You gather materials before you build. Dry leaves, straw, and wood chips give you carbon. Grass clippings, kitchen scraps, and fresh plant matter provide nitrogen. You keep manure out unless you have training for handling it safely. You want a clean and stable system. Safety stands next. Heat rises fast in an active pile. Steam can burn your hands or face when you turn the material. You wear gloves and a simple dust mask. You keep your footing steady. You clear loose boards, stray wires, or sharp metal from the build area. You position the pile away from structures and fence lines. A hot pile can push temperatures high enough to threaten wooden walls if placed too close. Tools are direct. You need a pitchfork, a rake, a watering can or hose with a low-flow setting, and a compost thermometer. You check the handle strength on the pitchfork. You confirm the thermometer stem is straight. You keep the hose free from leaks. Each tool plays a role. The pitchfork turns the pile. The rake shapes it. The thermometer tells you when to act. Guesswork is your enemy. The pile only works when you read it on purpose. Steps begin with the foundation. You clear a square on bare soil. The earth beneath allows drainage and airflow. You lay down a coarse carbon base of straw or rough wood chips. This lifts the pile off the ground and prevents compaction. You build the first nitrogen layer over that. You spread it evenly and keep it loose. You add water until the material feels like a wrung-out sponge. You do not soak it. Oversaturation suffocates the microbes. You continue in layers. Carbon, nitrogen, moisture. Repeat. Each layer sits at least 3 to 4 inches deep. You keep the pile tall enough to hold heat. A good hot pile reaches at least 3 feet in each direction. Anything smaller struggles to gain temperature. Anything larger becomes heavy and may form cold pockets. As you stack, you press lightly with the rake to shape the sides. You never pack the pile tight. Airflow must move through it. Oxygen drives heat. Lack of oxygen kills it. Once built, you leave the pile for 24 to 48 hours. The microbial surge begins on its own. You insert the thermometer straight into the center. The reading guides your next move. If the pile sets below 80 degrees, your nitrogen layer may be too weak. If it pushes past 150 degrees, you must turn it before it sterilizes the material or kills the microbes. You watch the numbers with focus. Hot composting rewards alertness. Airflow management defines the next phase. You turn the pile when the temperature peaks or when it drops after a rise. Turning pulls cooler material into the center. It breaks up clumps. It restores oxygen. You use the pitchfork with slow, deliberate moves. You lift from the bottom and pull toward the outside. You shift outer layers toward the core. You build the pile back to its original size and shape. You check moisture again. Too dry and the system slows. Too wet and you risk an anaerobic pocket that smells sour and drains progress. You repeat this cycle across 2 to 3 weeks. Heat rises, you turn. Heat drops, you turn. You monitor each stage with steady hands. The material changes texture. The sharp greens fade into darker shades. The browns soften. You see steam during each turn. That is normal. You still work carefully. Steam means heat. Heat demands respect. You watch for risks. Overheating is the first. If the thermometer shows a sharp climb beyond 150 degrees, you act immediately. You turn the pile to release heat and increase airflow. If you ignore it, the pile may dry out or collapse inward. Cold spots are another risk. You detect them by checking multiple points with the thermometer. If an area falls behind in temperature, you mix those zones into the core during the next turn. Anaerobic pockets bring a different kind of failure. They form when moisture overwhelms the structure. You smell sourness or see sludge. If that happens, you pry the pocket open, mix it with dry carbon, and rebuild the layer. Once corrected, the pile recovers. If ignored, the smell intensifies, and the process breaks down. Checks and fixes keep you steady. You check temperature daily. You check moisture by squeezing a small handful. You check airflow by watching for resistance when turning. If the material clumps or fights the fork, you break it apart. If the surface crusts, you rake it gently to open channels. You do not rush the work. Each task prevents a larger problem. Care continues even when the temperature begins to fall for the final time. As the heat fades, the material darkens. It becomes crumbly. The texture turns uniform. The smell shifts to clean earth. This means the active composting stage is ending. You let the pile rest for another week. You test for readiness by checking for recognizable scraps. If you still see clear pieces of leaves, stems, or food scraps, the system needs more time. When the compost finishes, you handle it with respect. You lift it with the pitchfork and spread it through a simple screen if you want a finer grade. You keep it dry but not brittle. You store it near the garden in a covered bin if not used immediately. Hot compost moves from scraps to soil in weeks because you stayed ahead of each turn and each change. You now understand the force inside a hot pile. Heat speeds everything. Heat punishes hesitation. Heat rewards accuracy. As you stand beside the finished compost, you feel the ground ease a little. You controlled the process. You held the line. But the question rises as the steam fades. What happens when the pile no longer runs on heat? Chapter 2. Cold Compost. Cold composting feels simple when you first look at it. You pile organic material and let time do the work. But the moment you begin, the pressure takes a different shape. There is no heat to mask mistakes. There is no turning schedule to force corrections. The pile changes slowly. And slow change hides problems until they grow large. You learn to read subtle signs. You learn to manage moisture without the urgency of heat. You rely on patience instead of pace. Cold composting looks passive, but it demands awareness in a quieter form. Your scope begins with the system. Cold compost breaks material down through natural decay over months. It depends on fungi, insects, and microbes that thrive without high temperatures. You do not chase 120 degrees. You do not check for steam. Your job is to give the pile the right materials, the right moisture, and the right airflow. Then let time move. This method fits when you have space, patience, and a steady supply of organic waste. Safety matters even without heat. Cold piles can hide sharp objects, mold pockets, and pests. You wear gloves when handling material. You keep a mask nearby if you see heavy fungal growth. You never add meat, dairy, or oily foods. They attract animals and sour the pile. You also avoid diseased plant material. Without heat, pathogens may survive. Cold compost does not sanitize. It only breaks down. Tools are minimal. Use a rake, a pitchfork, and a hose. You may build the pile inside a wire cage or a simple wooden frame. You check the wire for broken edges. You check the frame for loose nails. Cold compost sits outside for months, so the structure must withstand weather. A loose panel or sagging wall invites rodents. A broken fence corner spills material and ruins airflow. Steps start with choosing a spot. You pick an area with light shade. Full sun dries the pile. Heavy shade slows decay. You aim for a place where water does not pool. Standing water ruins the base layer and traps moisture. You clear the ground and level it. Cold compost works best on bare soil. Earthworms and soil microbes will climb into the pile from below. You start with a carbon-heavy base. Dry leaves, straw, and wood chips give structure. You spread a layer a few inches thick. You keep it loose. You then add a thin layer of green material. Grass clippings, plant trimmings, and vegetable scraps fit here. You avoid wet kitchen waste at this stage. You do not want to start the pile with something that compacts. You spray enough water to dampen the layer. You do not saturate it. No heat means no strong evaporation. Once soaking starts, it lingers. You build the pile with a simple pattern. Carbon, green, carbon, green. Each layer stays thin. Thick layers slow airflow and hold too much liquid. You keep stacking until the pile reaches at least 3 feet high. A smaller pile dries out and stalls. A larger pile may slump and form anaerobic pockets. You shape the sides with a rake. You keep the top flat so rain spreads evenly. Then you wait. Cold composting begins with silence. No sharp heat rise. No urgent signs. The pile slumps slightly each week. Microbes start at the edges. Fungi form threads through the layers. Insects move in. Beetles, pill bugs, and worms all play roles. You check the pile once a week. You lift a corner with the pitchfork to see moisture. The material should feel damp but not heavy. If it clumps or oozes, the water content is too high. Moisture management defines cold composting. Rain is both help and threat. Light rain keeps the pile alive. Heavy rain drowns it. You cover the pile loosely with a sheet of cardboard or a breathable tarp during storms. You never seal it tight. Plastic traps condensation and shuts down airflow. After rain, you lift the cover and check for sour smells. Any foul odor signals anaerobic breakdown. You fix it by adding dry carbon and gently mixing the top layer. Because you do not turn the pile, airflow must come from structure. Large materials like sticks or corn stalks help open channels. You add them sparingly. Too many large pieces slow decay. You monitor the sides. If the pile crusts or forms a hard shell, you break the surface with a rake. This allows moisture and oxygen to reach the interior again. Risks move slowly, but hit hard. One risk is pests. Without heat, small animals may investigate. You prevent this with proper materials. No food scraps that attract rodents. No sweet fruit waste left exposed. If pests appear, you add a thick carbon cap and reinforce the sides. You may also install a wire mesh barrier under the pile to block burrowing. Another risk is weed seeds. Cold piles do not kill them. If you add weeds with mature seeds, you may spread them across your garden when the compost finishes. You must inspect plant waste before adding it. Any seed heads get discarded separately. Seasonal timing affects decay. In warm months, the pile moves steadily. In cold months, it slows almost to a stop. You do not rush it. You accept that this system follows nature. You continue adding thin layers of carbon and green material as they become available. The pile rises and settles in cycles. Checks guide you. You inspect moisture. You inspect smell. You inspect texture along the edges. If the pile becomes too dry, you water lightly. If it becomes too wet, you lift the top layer and let air reach the core. You do not stir deep. That belongs to hot compost. Here, you correct only the surface and allow the internal structure to remain intact. Fixes stay simple. A dry pile gets water. A wet pile gets carbon. A smelly pile gets both airflow and fresh structure. An insect surge usually means success. A rodent visit means a material mistake. You correct it immediately. Cold compost rewards consistency and punishes neglect. Care stretches across months. You walk past the pile each week. You note the slump. You watch fungi spread in thin white threads along sticks and leaves. You see material darken slowly. The pile shrinks by half, and then more. When the bulk fades and the texture looks like dark soil, you test it. You pull away a handful from the bottom. If you still recognize leaves or stems, it needs more time. If the material feels crumbly and smells like earth, it is ready. You lift the finished compost with a pitchfork. You may pass it through a screen for a finer grade. You spread it on beds, mix it into garden soil, or use it around trees. Cold compost carries more organic fragments than hot compost, but it strengthens soil structure over time. You step back from the empty frame and see the cycle completed. Cold compost asked for patience, steady eyes, and quiet correction. It taught you to work with time instead of heat. You learned to trust slow decay and intervene only when signs demanded it. But as you finish the last shovel of dark compost, another question rises. What happens when the system is no longer a pile of scraps, but a living colony that reacts to every move you make? Chapter 3. Vermicompost. You begin vermicomposting with a clear shift in mindset. Hot compost runs on heat. Cold compost runs on time. Vermicompost runs on life. The system breeds, crawls, responds, and fails based on how you handle the creatures inside it. Red wigglers cannot speak, but they react to every mistake. Too much moisture, and they drown. Too much food, and they suffocate. Too much heat, and the entire colony collapses. You treat the bin like a controlled habitat. You respect the worms because they are the engine that drives the process. Your scope starts with understanding the species. Red wigglers thrive in shallow, moist environments with steady airflow. They do not dig deep. They feed near the surface. They tolerate a narrow temperature range. You keep the bin between 55 degrees and 77 degrees for stability. Anything hotter or colder slows them down or kills them. You place the bin indoors or in a sheltered outdoor area where conditions remain even. A garage or covered shed works. Direct sun does not. Vermicompost dies under sun exposure. Safety comes before setup. Worm bins create moisture, and moisture attracts mold and insects if ignored. You wear gloves when handling bedding, food scraps, or castings. You wash your hands after feeding or harvesting. You keep the bin away from stored fuel, power tools, or rodent-prone corners. Worms rely on clean, safe conditions. Your habits protect them. Tools are few but must be reliable. You use a bin with a lid that allows airflow. You add a drill if you need to create extra ventilation holes. You keep a small spray bottle for moisture control. You keep a hand rake or garden trowel for moving bedding. You keep a simple flashlight for checking the lower layers. Each tool helps you maintain consistency. The bin cannot defend itself. You defend it by routine. Steps begin with bedding. Bedding sets the foundation for the worm habitat. You blend shredded cardboard, shredded paper, coconut coir, or aged leaves. You soak the bedding lightly, then squeeze it until the excess water runs out. It should feel damp, not wet. You fill the bin 1/3 full. The bedding must remain loose. Air pockets help the worms breathe. If the bedding compacts, the worms move upward searching for oxygen and may escape through the lid. You introduce the worms next. You place them gently onto the bedding and let them burrow. Red wigglers avoid light. They hide within minutes if the environment is correct. If they stay on the surface, something is wrong. Bedding may be too dry, too wet, or too cold. You fix this immediately. This first response shows how sensitive the system is. You observe without rushing. You give the worms time to settle. Feeding begins once the worms establish themselves. You start with small amounts, vegetable scraps, crushed eggshells, coffee grounds, and soft plant waste fit well. You bury the food in one corner. You do not spread it across the entire surface. This gives the worms a clear feeding zone and keeps the rest of the bin stable. You watch how fast the worms process the scraps. When the food disappears, you add more. If food remains after several days, you fed too much. You correct by pausing feeding until the worms catch up. Overfeeding is the most common failure. Food rots, heats, and invites pests. The worms retreat. You recognize overfeeding by smell. A sour or ammonia scent means decay has moved faster than the worms can manage. You fix it by removing rotting material and adding fresh bedding. You never stir the entire bin. You disturb the worms only as much as needed. They recover if conditions stabilize. Moisture defines the next phase. Worms breathe through their skin. If the bedding dries, they suffocate. If the bedding floods, they drown. You check moisture by lifting a handful of bedding. It should feel like a run-out sponge. You spray lightly if it feels dry. You add shredded cardboard if it feels wet. You do this weekly. Too much moisture creates anaerobic layers. Too little moisture sends the worms upward searching for escape. Airflow must remain constant. A worm bin needs ventilation through both the lid and the sides. If humidity builds too high, condensation forms on the lid. You lift it for a few minutes to release the moisture. If airflow is too strong, the bedding dries. You adjust by adding a loose cover of damp paper. Worm care is a balance of small corrections made before the colony feels stress. Risks evolve as the colony grows. Overheating is one. Even indoor spaces can spike during summer. Worms cannot handle heat above 86 degrees. You check the environment often. If temperatures rise, you move the bin to a cooler space. Another risk is fruit flies. They arrive when exposed food sits near the surface. You bury scraps deeper and add a carbon cap to block access. You avoid sweet foods if flies persist. Bin overcrowding appears with success. Worms reproduce when conditions stay stable. You notice more castings, more movement, and a thicker layer of life near the top. Overcrowding stresses the colony. You address this by harvesting castings and splitting the bin. You move half the worms to a new system or share them with another homesteader. A balanced colony works faster. A crowded colony slows and declines. Harvesting castings marks a key moment. You stop feeding the worms for several days so the scraps disappear. You then push fresh bedding and new food to one side of the bin. The worms migrate toward the fresh zone. You wait as they move. When the opposite side sits mostly worm-free, you scoop out the castings. You never rush this. Rushing injured worms. Injured worms attract pests and weaken the system. Castings carry value. They enrich soil, strengthen seedlings, and improve water retention. You sift them lightly for a fine grade. You store them dry in a container with airflow. Moist castings clump and mold. Dry castings remain stable and ready for use. Checks guide long-term maintenance. You inspect the bin weekly. You monitor bedding texture, moisture balance, food level, and worm activity. You look for signs of stress. Worms gathering on the lid or sides indicate trouble. You correct temperature, moisture, or airflow before the colony declines. Vermicomposting does not forgive long gaps in attention. The worms need stability, and stability comes from your routine. Fixes rely on small changes. If the bin smells, you add carbon. If worms escape, you adjust conditions. If bedding compacts, you lift sections gently to restore structure. If pests appear, you track the cause. You do not panic. You follow the signs. A worm colony survives when the caretaker stays steady. Care strengthens over time. You learn the rhythm of the system. Feeding, checking, adjusting, harvesting. Each cycle builds confidence. The worms turn waste into soil with quiet efficiency. You respect the process because life is doing the work for you. When the colony thrives, you feel the weight ease. Vermicompost becomes a stable part of your homestead. You complete the cycle. Hot compost taught speed. Cold compost taught patience. Vermicompost teaches responsibility for living systems. All three methods serve you. All three transform waste into soil. As you set the bin back in place and close the lid, the final question stands clear. How well can you maintain a system that depends entirely on your discipline and care?